In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
When it comes to America's history, what happened this week has to be a truly dark stain on America. No, not the first Republican presidential candidates debate. I'm referring, of course, to the Georgia prosecutor who arrested President Trump, and for the first time in our history, we have a former president with a mugshot for having an opinion, a belief, about an election he believed, as do literally tens of millions of Americans, and an election he believed was stolen, and for trying to get to the bottom of it. You know who else has that same belief? Hillary Clinton. In 2016, Hillary was actively trying to get electors to flip their votes. Hillary had alternative slates. Hillary made phone calls to try to uncover votes or get votes thrown out. Where's her mugshot? Think about this. Our very First Amendment is about opinions and beliefs, free speech, the right to your religious opinions, the right to protest, the ability to write and publish your opinions in the press. But the left is attempting to lock up the president for exercising his First Amendment rights. Rights that our founders had set up to be guaranteed. That meant the government agreed these rights are so sacred that we will use the power of the government to stop anyone who comes between you and exercising those God-given rights. Now, the left is using the power of the government to take away rights it was duty-bound to safeguard. But what's truly disheartening in all of this is that too many on the left are celebrating this, cheering that, oh look, Trump has a mugshot. This is their reality. In their world, Trump is Hitler. And everyone who likes or even admires Trump for standing up to the deep state are a bunch of Nazis. And if the government goes after you and locks you up, or if you catch a virus and die, or if you're denied health care or access to grocery stores or housing or even just basic dignity and common courtesy because you don't believe the government's mandates, well, you deserve it. You deserve what you get. But here's the irony. If we actually lived in the world the left apparently wants, but the right was in power, they would be the ones locked up for thinking Trump was Hitler. We have moved past the beginning stages of a highly abusive government and legal system. We are well into stage two and nearing stage three, totalitarianism. But it's more than the left just using the government and the legal system to attack its political opponents as if that isn't horrid enough. No. More importantly, it's to force its ideology on everyone like never before and to legalize their ideology and to make yours illegal. Why? Because if they can make their ideology the unassailable, not allowed to be questioned, government-approved and accepted ideology, then they have unlimited power. Of course the government is spending $1 trillion on our ideology, on the weather. When you make it law, you can then punish those who disagree for having differing views. That's not science. That's doctrine. On today's show, we're going to confront the doctrine, not the science, the doctrine of global warming. And there is a dangerous new development, a new precedent coming out of Wyoming that could become the new model to force everyone to bow the knee to global warming. Stay tuned for that. I'd like to welcome Chuck Weiss back to the show. He is a scientist, trained meteorologist, and fearsome global warming debunker, a fan favorite, and one of ours. Chuck, it's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Mark. It's been a while, and boy, has a lot happened since we last talked.
Oh my gosh, it sure has. But I'd like to start with some recent history here, so to speak. You being a meteorologist and as I said, a fearsome global warming debunker there, a couple of weeks back, we had about 7 to 10 days worth of 100-degree-plus spikes in the temperature here in the Willamette Valley and across the United States here. And of course, there were these news reports shrieking about the hottest summer in history and the hottest ever recorded. I mean, this is radio, so you can't hear my eyes roll, but trust me, they did a couple of flips here. So was it the hottest summer in history?
it was not the hottest summer in history. I mean, they're taking a look at individual city records, and there were some broke. There's no question this was a very hot summer across the United States, but the atmosphere is a very chaotic and randomized system, and things like this happen all the way through time. There's nothing you can do about it. But what they do when they promote this climate hysteria is they latch on to things when they can get a favorable outcome, such as all the extreme heat. And in Phoenix, Arizona, they broke the all-time number of days, as far as their records were kept, of the temperature, maximum temperature being 110 degrees or greater. So it was hot down there, no question about it. And then up here in Oregon, they made a big deal out of the fact that we broke the August record, which was set back in 1981. That's the last time we had temperatures as high as we did this August. And the old record was 107, so we beat it by a day. And 4 days later than the occurrence back in 1981, we had the 107 on the 10th and then the 108 on the 14th of this month. And so they tried to make a big deal out of that by saying, well, this is very unusual because it's happening so late in the season, 4 days past the occurrence of 107, and yet we got 108 with a shorter days. Well, we're getting shorter days all right, but I ran the numbers on that, Mark. I made some radiative calculations based upon that 4 day difference, and we between August 10th and August 14th, we lost 4 watts on a square meter of available solar heating during the daytime by the slightly shorter days and slightly lower sun angle. But in order to get 1 degree of temperature out of that, you need to have 6.5 watts, not 4. So it equates to just a little over a degree Fahrenheit of a loss of daytime solar heating. But then they don't count the fact that since 1981, the urbanization of Portland has grown tremendously. And we know the urban heat island effect. It's a well-known phenomena that causes temperatures to become higher than in previous records. So it's not a surprise at all that you beat that by 1 degree. And, of course, it's being chalked up to things like climate change. But we've had 100-degree temperatures here, Mark, as late as September. And you go back to the year 1944, there was a stretch of 7 days. And one of those days, it reached 103. So we're losing solar radiation very rapidly now as we approach the mid and latter part of August. And but it's not a one-for-one trade as the sun angle declines rapidly, because the mid and upper atmosphere reach their warmest point in the summer in from all the convective heating that's occurred earlier in the summer. We reach that peak in late August and early September. So even with a reduced sun angle, a much reduced sun angle, and by the end of August, we lose, 50 watts on a square meter compared to the early part of August, or August 10th. And so that's a lot of loss of solar radiation. But because the atmosphere is at its warmest point, even with that loss, you can get temperatures in the 90s in September. And in the early part of September, you can still get to 100 degrees, although you won't get anywhere close to the 116, which was now the all-time new record that we had in June 2021, and you won't get 108 degrees or anywhere close to that late in the year. But it just goes to show you, you know, as long as summer is summer, we get hot weather here. We can, and there will be times that we do. And we're in that sort of a year now here where we're seeing a lot of 90-degree days, and we're seeing a few temperatures getting up over 100 degrees. But that's normal part of the cycle. Just the fact that you've got hot weather doesn't prove that CO2 caused it. You know, these guys like to take a correlation and make it a causation, and you can't do that. Science doesn't work that way. And if you look at the causation factors, there isn't any. The correlation, actually, over a very long history in temperature, if you go back and look at proxy records, the R-square, or correlation coefficient to CO2 and temperature, is very poor. It's like less than 0.4. And so it's a very poor correlation, because it isn't the cause, and the records show this.
Yeah.
But yet they like to take weather events, and they flip those now. They used to say, when they were honest about this at the very, very beginning, they used to admit that, yeah, we can't take weather records or things that happen with the weather on short term and call it climate. Well, when they ran out of steam with the rising temperatures, which they did during the 2000 era, the temperatures quit climbing, they had to switch gears to keep the climate change hysteria alive. So then they started saying, well, if we get a tornado, if we get hot weather, now it's all related to climate change.
Yeah, they are literally blaming every weather event on global warming, whether it's too much rain, too much snow, too much cold, too much heat. I've said it before, global warming is like racism, but for weather. All right, let's go and take a break. We'll have lots more with Chuck Weiss. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the Ice 5 Radio Show. Talk today to Chuck Weiss. He's a former meteorologist and debunker of global warming junk science and fear-mongering. Fear-mongering that bad science is forever stoking because there's a lot of money to be had from bad science and from the misinformed people who believe it, the tyranny of the unassailable experts. And Chuck, we were talking about global warming being blamed for everything, and one of the more recent events was were these fires over in Maui that destroyed a whole bunch of homes. There is still about 1,000 people that are either dead, presumed dead, or still missing. There are a lot of those are children that are missing, and so of course, the left immediately has jumped on. Well, it was global warming that caused all of these fires. So is it possible that this could be global warming?
It's impossible that it was global warming. In fact, we know exactly what it was. And this incompetent, sadistic Biden administration went over there. President Biden went over there. I don't even like calling him that. But he went over there and actually wants to declare a climate emergency over this. But we know what the cause of it was. It had nothing to do with climate change. We had a very strong high-pressure system in the mid-Pacific Ocean, well north of Hawaii, that generated strong easterly trade winds. And it just so happens, and this is, again, randomization and a chaotic nature of the atmosphere, but when you get periods of these strong trade winds, which are the east winds in Hawaii, you get periods where the stability of the atmosphere is very high. And in this case, you had practically no temperature change up through about 8,000 feet. We almost had a isothermal atmosphere. So that creates, it sets the conditions in a stratified stable layer of air like that with a strong wind that's going up and over the top of a mountain. It sets up a condition which will generate what we call mountain waves and gravity waves, which will take a parcel of air as it rises up on the lee or the windward side of the mountain. Of course, it cools and it gains potential energy. But because of that isothermal layer where the temperature is not changing, when it reaches the top, it's going to be colder, much colder than the environment around it, which will cause it on the lee side going into Maui to sink and accelerate. So that combined, that mountain wave and gravity wave combined with the normal pressure gradient, which would bring about 40 to 45 mile an hour wind gusts, and accelerated it to 70. So the stage was set, and the models that we ran, the short-term weather forecast models, which are very good and picked up on this thing, had indicated that wind gusts in Maui at the time this occurred would reach 70 miles an hour. And so there was plenty of warning. The National Weather Service, which serves the island of Maui, had issued a red flag warning because the grasslands and fuels east of Lahaina were very dry, like they get there almost every summer. So if you get a very strong wind like this, which was in the forecast, and then you have any sort of ignition source, you're in extreme danger of having a rapidly spreading fire.
Well,
and that's exactly what happened.
And that's the problem not only with Maui, but here in Oregon and other far-left states, is that they want to blame climate change and global warming for these forest fires. Well, they happen because you are not out there actively managing these forests and these native areas. So if you believe that climate change is causing things, you should be doing more management, not less, and yet that's what we see time and time again, and then these disasters happen.
Yeah, they do. They happen because I don't know what happened to and why they decided not to produce as much sugar cane and pineapple things that they had produced on the island before, but they cut way back on that. And Maui government, instead of managing those lands, they went with climate change agendas and focused all their attention on that rather than managing what those lands would turn into if they're not going to be used for sugarcane production and sugar production.
Sending up
and
a timber box.
They turn into very very volatile grass fields that get dry out in the summer. And if you get an ignition source like a down power line or wherever that came from, you're asking for a disaster. And so the table was set for it. And I know that there's a lot of people that think, well, the fire was set deliberately. It might have been. I don't know. We don't know the answer to that affirmatively yet, one way or the other, whether it was caused by a deliberate human setting of a fire or whether power lines came down from the gusty winds and the sparks there ignited it.
Yeah.
But one way or the other, it was set off. And then there was a monumental failure by government authorities to warn the citizens of what was coming their way. For example, they have the warning sirens for tsunamis. They're also used for fires and any kind of natural disaster on Maui. If you remember, when Trump was in office back in 2020, I think, or 2021, they set those off falsely, claiming that there was an incoming ballistic missile from North Korea. And so they used them to warn the public of that. They got everybody all upset back during that false missile warning. And they certainly could have used them in this case of a real scenario to warn of this fire coming, spreading rapidly down the hill into Maui. But they decided not to send to set the sirens off. And then there were also police turning citizens away from leaving the city. I don't know why that was what was happening. Some of the citizens were complaining about that. And just a number of factors where they were trying to, it seems like they were trying to confine people to the city when the fires were in danger of developing and then rapidly spreading into the area, which they did and totally destroyed the town. It's awful what happened.
Well,
and,
it is. And
there's
and
a lot of blame to go around to government.
Well, and exactly. And I think that's a lot of what is fueling some, you know, at this point, there are conspiracy theories. We need more evidence besides anecdotal reports. But that's typical. You know, in the wake of government incompetence, these conspiracy theories are going to rise. But, you know, it doesn't have to be a conspiracy theory. The effect is the same. And it comes down to you shouldn't trust the government and don't depend on the government. And so we'll see what happens here. But I'm already hearing people are saying that there's a media blackout, that they're not being allowed to talk about these things. I do find it very troubling that many of these people that are missing are children who were apparently sent home in the middle of the school day when their parents weren't even there. So You get these kids trapped in these houses. I mean, this is just a horrific mess. And once again, it's the government at fault, but wanting to blame climate change.
Yeah, they blame climate change. Another story that I heard was they were saying, oh, it was Hurricane Dora, which was passing south of the islands at the time. Hurricane Dora's winds had absolutely no effect on the islands. It was way too far south. This was a typical easterly trade wind situation, which happens frequently. It has nothing to do with climate change. But like I said, if the atmospheric conditions are right, you can get these mountain gravity waves, which will accelerate that wind as it comes down the leeward side of the West Maui Mountains. And the citizens there know about this because once every 4 or 5 years, they get what they call this Maui wind. I forgot what the term was that they used, but they're aware of it because it happens. And this is not the first time it happened. The Weather Service knew about it, and they warned the island of Maui by issuing a red flag warning. Yet there was no precautions taken to mitigate the risk of fire if there was going to be down power lines due to these winds.
And it seems
so
rather
it's a
odd.
Monumental failure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems rather odd that they're blaming dry winds on a hurricane. That's kind of unusual. All right, let's go and take a break. Everyone stay with us. Lots more. Chuck Weiss can be talking about lawfare. And also coming up later, we'll be talking about election integrity. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Chuck Weiss. He's a former meteorologist and debunker of global warming junk science. And we'd love to have him on to talk about these kinds of issues, but also expand into some other issues as well that we'll be getting into later, including election integrity. And Chuck, so we went out of that last segment there talking about dry winds being generated from a hurricane. Are dry winds even possible with a hurricane?
No, they're not. When you get into where the hurricane pressure gradient is that causes the hurricane force winds, you've got massive bands of intense thunderstorms, which actually compose and make up how the hurricane gets formed. And there's always torrential rains that occur with those. And that's why when the storms like that move inland to land areas and weaken, you get torrential rains and flooding as the storm moves further to the north, because all the latent heat stored in the storm is now getting released in terms of precipitation, and it causes flooding issues when the hurricane dies down and doesn't have hurricane force winds associated with it anymore. So, no, there's no way, and this is why we were saying that there's absolutely, there's just no way. We knew where the hurricane was with Dora, and it was well south of Hawaii, and the wind there had absolutely nothing to do with it. This was another deliberate lie told by climate change alarmists that promote the hysteria and are trying to get more government regulation forced upon the citizenry.
Yeah, and I kind of get the sense that it's going to be really hard to get the real truth of what actually happened out of Maui. Let's shift gears a little bit. Sue and Settle has been a funding mechanism for the environmental left, but just a quick recap here. Sue and Settle is when an organization exploits the inefficiency of government, finding some deadline they missed or not doing enough of what they promised to do and so on. They sue the government using cheap lawyers, sometimes free law students, to file the paperwork. And then the government settles out of court for a self-imposed fine and reimburses the organization for legal fees, but at a standard hourly rate for actual attorneys. So you go into that with free lawyers, but get reimbursed for, say, 150, 200, 300 hours, whatever it is, at $200 a pop or more. But sue and settle is really just the tip of the iceberg for think tanks getting tens of millions of dollars from taxpayers for global warming, who suddenly have the disposable free cash to sit around and scheme up new ways to bilk money from the government. And suing the government for global warming is really, I think, entering a new and dangerous territory, in my opinion. They're shifting to sue the government because the lawsuits have largely failed against private companies and the oil industry in particular. But the government is a willing accomplice, and they are true believers in the money scheme for far-left organizations. So last week, August 14th, there was a case in Montana that ruled in favor of the global warmers. And this is from the Associated Press. A Montana judge on Monday sided with young environmental activists who said state agencies were violating their constitutional right to a clean and healthful environment by permitting fossil fuel development without considering its effect on the climate. The ruling, in the first of its kind trial in the U.S., adds to a small number of legal decisions around the world that have established a government's duty to protect citizens from climate change. I think this is really new, dangerous territory, because if they're already blaming everything on global warming, now you can blame everything on the government that didn't protect you from everything caused by global warming. This is going to end up leading to tremendous amounts of lawsuits. And I know that you followed that case. What can you tell us about it, and why did the global warmers win that?
Well, it was flawed from the beginning, and it makes me highly suspicious that the district attorney for the state of Montana was going to willingly let citizens that brought the citizen activists that brought this lawsuit win it. He did nothing basically to fight this like he should have. At the very onset of the trial, they allowed statements to be made that were not proven. Actually, you could prove a lot of them to be false. And the premises was that the human emissions of CO2 have caused undeniable changes in the earth temperature and caused warming and damage to the environment, blah, 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 blah. There was a lot of talk about this at the beginning and the opening remarks. Nobody challenged those statements at all. Hmm. And the district attorney had a climate scientist who's very reputable. Her name is Judith Curry. And they were going to use her as an expert witness to debunk a lot of the stuff that these citizen activists had tried to say was happening with the climate. And they didn't use her. They didn't use any of her testimony. Hmm. They didn't block any of these comments at the beginning of the trial. They let all of this stuff basically steamroll the government and allow it to end up getting a judgment against it like it did. And it's just reprehensible that this is the way this was conducted. And it all starts with the premise in Montana law that says that citizens in that state, as I'm sure it does in a lot of others, have a state constitutional right to clean air, water, and resources. Well, yes, everybody wants that. That's environmental law that I think everybody would agree to. But they build on that by saying, and because CO2 emissions are causing irreparable harm to the climate and to our water and air and everything else in the state of Montana, us poor little kids growing up here are being deprived of our right to live under that law. And we need the government now to swoop in and enforce very, very detrimental regulations to be able to reverse this and allow us to live as the state constitution claims that we should. But the problem with it is CO2 is not causing the climate to change, and nobody has ever proven that. That is the problem.
Yeah,
they made an assertion which can't prove, and then the judge acted on that to say yes. So now we've got to have all these just demonstrable regulations to be able to give these poor little kids the right to grow up under what they feel that they got to grow up under. The whole case is based upon feelings. No science was behind it whatsoever. It's just deplorable what happened there.
Yeah.
It's really a tragedy.
It really is. And there's a couple of things that I want to unpack from that, but it's going to take a little bit too much more time than we have in this segment. So let's break a little bit early. Everyone stay with us. We'll pick things up with Chuck Weiss after this. And welcome back. This is the Ice Fire Radio Show. Talking today to Chuck Weiss. He is a meteorologist and a fearsome global warming debunker. And in that last segment there, we were talking about this recent case by Montana where some young activists successfully sued the state government for not providing them with a clean environment. And this is a unique case to Montana, according to some articles that I've read. Other states do not have these kinds of constitutional rights to a clean and healthy environment. And that's one of the things that I wanted to pick up on, that because I can see this now being the carrot out there for other states that will now add constitutional right to their constitutions to a clean environment. This, I think, opens the door to an awful lot of lawsuits and a lot of other problems in other states if they see this as a winning formula to then be able to sue the state government and enforce some of these climate change initiatives.
Well, I think that's what's coming down the road next. And unfortunately, with the sorts of people we have in Oregon, it's just like a hotbed for environmental activism. They're going to pick up on this, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if new climate lawsuits now are started in Oregon. And mm-hmm. if we don't have a good district attorney representing the state and the citizens, like what happened in Montana, and just rolls over and lets these people make untrue statements and steamroll the courts, they'll end up losing these, and we'll end up with the same sort of problems that they're going to probably have now in Montana from this judge's ruling. And the judges, you know, he's tied to what evidence is admitted into court. People have to remember that. He may have his own ideas about what he thinks is going on and how he would like to rule, but he has to stick to what's presented to him to make a ruling like this. And unfortunately, in the Montana case, like I said, the DA did nothing to defend the citizens. He didn't use his expert witnesses. He didn't fight the statements that were made in opening arguments. It was a disaster from the get-go. And so it's no surprise that it turned out like it did.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's a surprise. I guess when I look at the outcomes of this, and as I said, that other states may be eyeing this as an option to add their own constitutional right to a clean environment. You know, recently Oregon added health care to its constitution as a basic human right. And suddenly, I guess we just have to have single-payer socialized medicine now. They've been moving that way, but now that it's a constitutional right, you can see how this just opens the door to that. And I think by opening this door to it's a constitutional basic human right to a clean environment, which is nonsense. I mean, nature is pretty nasty and dirty all by itself. And when you start actually having to use the environment, it can get kind of messy. And so it's nonsensical that we're thinking that this is a basic human right. But I can see where this is going to open the door to yet more environmental controls by the government and yet more lawsuits against the government when they don't defend this new basic human right that we suddenly seem to think we have.
Yes. And we've got the ammunition on the citizen side that are against these things to fight them. We have the ammunition if we're just allowed to bring it into court. There was a physicist that just made some incredible statements about the fraud of climate change. His name is Dr. John Clauser. He's a Nobel laureate in physics for his work in quantum mechanics. He was a 2022 recipient of the Nobel Prize in Physics. And he has just roasted these climate hysterics and those that believe in these failed climate models I've talked about before on your show, and basically taken them to the cleaners. And people like him could be very valuable witnesses along with other academics. And these are true scientists who were outside academic circles but know what the truth is. The thing I like about Dr. Clauser is, being the physicist that he is, he never studied atmospheric science. He didn't study it like I did. He was in other branches of physics. Atmospheric science is a branch of applied physics, but it's not physics itself. And the beauty of what Dr. Clauser has discovered on his own and concluded on his own was he took his knowledge in physics and applied it to the atmosphere, and he did full circle and came back around to the founding principles which were taught in this science 70 years ago that made us conclude atmospheric CO2 is not controlling on Earth temperature. It can't do so in the presence of the Earth's hydrological cycle, or the cycle that produces the clouds, the rain, and water vapor in the atmosphere. And so he is concluding the same thing and going back full circle and basically bypassing these models, which he's been very critical of. So people like this are out there. They can certainly add a lot of credibility to defending against these future frivolous lawsuits. And we have to do something about this, Mark, because it's getting out of control. Oh, it's just completely out of control. These activists are wrecking the country with this nonsense.
Yep.
And the problem is we get nothing for all of this regulation and all the lawsuits. We're just losing, and we're losing to the rest of the world in competitiveness because of what these people are doing to destroy us as a country.
You had mentioned that nobody challenged this notion that mankind putting CO2 into the atmosphere is causing climate change and all the rest. Could we as mankind actually put enough CO2 in the atmosphere to actually impact the weather, or is this all just entirely fantasy?
It's fantasy. There's no way you could put enough atmospheric CO2 or enough CO2 into the atmosphere. There's even a question as to how much humans are responsible for the total that's in the atmosphere. Dr. Edwin Berry did a whole bunch of research on that, and there were other people using carbon isotopes that did papers that basically came to the same conclusion he did. And if you use the IPCC's own numbers on the residence time of carbon in the atmosphere, his conclusion in a model he developed, a closed-circuit model that the IPCC uses a lot, he used a lot of their statistics that they claim are going on in the system. You come to the conclusion using a closed-circuit model, which is the only one in existence right now, that we're responsible for like 25% of all the total that's in the atmosphere, 25 to 30%. And the rest of it is caused by nature because there's a huge carbon cycle on a yearly basis that a lot of people aren't even aware of. And that controls the amount that actually stays in the atmosphere, and it's sensitive to temperature. So as the climate warms, you're going to get more CO2 released by nature than you are human beings, and our contribution to this is very insignificant compared to the total that's there. And the IPCC has taken the position a long time ago, and you know, incorrectly so, that humans are responsible for 100% of the increase since the start of the Industrial Revolution. And they use a faulty model called the burn model. And in one of those, the way things work in the burn model, the amount of carbon in the air is the amount of carbon in the atmosphere is determined by one reservoir where it stays in there forever. It doesn't ever change, and we know that's physically impossible.
Yeah,
so the burn model is flawed. Just put it that way to simplify things. It's flawed. It can't work. Berry's model is the only one and the first one of its kind that came along that showed otherwise, and it uses the same data the IPCC does, but the conclusions are radically different. And like I said, another paper backed this up using carbon isotopes and came to a very close conclusion that Berry did. And it's very nice to have a secondary paper to back that up because it shows Ed's on the right track. The IPCC is not.
Yeah.
But see, well, they use these things.
I think this is going to end up probably being challenged at some level. It doesn't sound like it's going to be used outside the state since it's a unique constitutional requirement there. The actual statute says the state shall maintain and improve a clean and healthful environment for present and future generations. I mean, that is so vague you can imagine suing the state for practically anything. Excessive snow and cold, mudslides, germs. I mean, you could even sue farmers over that. It's pretty crazy. All right, let's go and take a break, and we'll continue with Chuck Weiss after this. Welcome back. We're talking to Chuck Weiss. He's the former meteorologist and the fierce global warming debunker, and not just of global warming, but of all junk science, the leftist ideology. Right is right, and Chuck is definitely on the right. And in this segment, I'd really like to focus on why what we've been talking about matters so much, because it's important to understand this is laying the groundwork legally and throughout society as to where they want to take all of this. And Chuck, you've come across this group, the C40 group. Why don't you talk to us about that?
Yes, this is a group that I didn't know about, but unfortunately it spread its tentacles throughout the United States. It's called C40, and the chair of the organization is the mayor of London. His name is Sadiq Khan. And
Khan being a good name for him.
Yeah, he spells it K-H-A-N.
Yes.
But anyway, they've spread their tentacles throughout the major cities of the United States, be it Seattle, Portland, and in Portland, Mayor Ted Wheeler is a member of this group, so it's no surprise with what Portland is going through with a mayor like that. But it goes Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago. All the major cities are involved in this thing, and they've got some very ambitious, ridiculous goals that they claim that they want to reach. It's the idea is to be completely carbon neutral by 2050, but in 2030, by the year 2030, these nutty people are proposing that we don't have any meat consumption at all any further by humans. No meat consumption, no dairy consumption, And then they want no more than 3 articles of new clothing per year allowed per person. They don't want any vehicles owned by 2030. And I'm not sure what they meant by that. Do they mean internal combustion engines or
any vehicle?
Not
yeah.
vehicle
yeah.
at all.
Good question.
They don't make it clear. I'm guessing from everything else they're saying no more combustion engines by 2030. They've all got to be electric. And then you can't take more than any trips by air that are more than like 1,000 miles and for any one person in a year. I mean, these things are going to so hamstring the economy, it would just be incredibly damaging to our society to have such a stupid thing implemented. And like I said, the problem is you implement any of these things like they're trying to do with Oregon's climate policies now, which is causing the higher gas prices from taxation and the forcing of renewables into various different things. We get nothing for this, Mark. We're not going to reduce atmospheric CO2 levels to any measurable extent, and that's the whole premise that they use to be able to say we're changing the climate, that we're causing the CO2 levels to rise. These actions are going to do nothing to CO2. Mm-hmm. So even if you bought into their foolishness, which is scientifically incompetent and stupid, even if you bought into all of that, these plans won't change CO2 to any significant degree that will accomplish any of their stated goals, because it was Jim Hansen who told us that the safe CO2 level was supposed to be 350 parts per million by volume. And that's an arbitrary number. He has no way of, he never even demonstrated how he came up with that and what constitutes a safe climate. I mean, if we were back at 350, can you promise me we won't have any more hurricanes? What about tornadoes? What about heat waves? What about severe cold? What about all the things they blame on it now? Of course they can't. They can't promise you anything because it isn't going to make any difference. But they use that and say that's what our goal is, to get CO2 levels back to. But then on the other side of the coin, if you actually ran the numbers of trying to accomplish all this, as we do all these horrible things to our economy and destroy our way of life, the communist Chinese are laughing at us because under the Paris Accords, they don't have to do anything, and they're not. Their emissions are going up a lot. And then you take into consideration we're not responsible for 100% of the emissions. This will have no effect whatsoever climate.
If we choked down carbon dioxide to that 350 parts per million figure that he wanted, or even lower, wouldn't that really cause a lot of problems for plants? Because I know that greenhouses, they pump it to like 600 parts per million or even higher in these commercial greenhouses.
Well, it absolutely would. And when you talk about implementing solutions to where we want to say, let's plant 1,000 trees to take carbon out of the atmosphere, they talk about this all the time. These are constantly in their green plans. We got to remove more and more carbon from the atmosphere. Why would you want to remove CO2 from the atmosphere when it's beneficial to agriculture?
Sure.
Exactly what you said.
It's like cutting off oxygen for people. You know, plants.
Exactly. It's starving plant life, and it's going to accomplish nothing. Why would you want to sequester any of this? The answer to that is you don't. These are all based upon stupid, unproven ideas that are based upon failed climate models that don't work. We could have an hour discussion, if we wanted to, about why those things don't work. As an atmospheric science student and graduate of that entire discipline, I could go into a lot of why they don't work and what the restrictions on them are. But nonetheless, even though they put these models out and the output from them into the public domain, the policymakers use these like they're a settled science.
Yeah, I was going to say
totally disregarded science.
I was going to say that's why they use these models, is because they support what they're trying to do. And I guess you need... you don't need as much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere if the goal is to have fewer people. Fewer people need fewer plants. You know, maybe we could stop all of this rather than banning cars and banning meat and banning dairy, unless, of course, you're a rich lefty. We know that you'll still have access to those. But maybe we could stop all of this in its tracks if we just did one simple step, which is to ban private airplanes.
Oh, yeah. Ban private airplanes. That'll work. Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, you know, we would at least stop them from gathering together in Davos and taking these private jets everywhere that they say that they need because they're out there saving the planet.
Well, if you made them put their money where their mouth is, that would be an excellent idea.
Exactly.
But you know they're not going to They will not do it.
No.
They're always going to use the excuse, John Kerry, I think Rush Limbaugh in his day called him Lurch. That was a good name for the guy. But at any rate, he's running around the globe in a private jet owned by the Heinz Foundation and makes this claim, like a lot of the other people do that go to Davos in these globalist type meetings that they have, that, hey, somebody has to be able to administer climate change rules. Somebody has to be in charge of all of this.
Somebody has to be king is what he's really saying. So,
yeah, exactly.
All right,
somebody's got to be king,
yep.
And it might as well be me.
That's right. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll wrap things up with Chuck Weiss afterwards. Back in our final segment now on the Ice Bite Radio Show, we've been talking with Chuck Weiss. He's a fearsome global warming debunker and a meteorologist, an actual trained scientist, which positions him well to do that debunking. And we were going to talk about voter integrity and election integrity, but unfortunately, we're going to have to come back, have him back for that later in September. And Chuck, just real quick, if you could just give us kind of an update of the status of that lawsuit that you're involved in.
Okay, yeah, it's on appeal now, Mark, to the Ninth Circuit. Unfortunately, the district court judge that heard the case decided against us and unfortunately based it upon all of the same flawed logic that was used in any other election lawsuit. Instead of allowing us to present our case to the court, which we presented in the lawsuit itself, we had plenty of evidence for, they take the position that because the complaint isn't specific enough and they're saying it's so generalized, in other words, we only represent a small part of the total voter population. Therefore, it's too generalized, our complaints, to really know whether or not we have a claim. Therefore, they go back and hit us with standing, saying, well, you really don't have standing. You're not specific enough. And our attorney has used some very good law from a dissenting opinion on Judge Thomas when an individual citizen out in Pennsylvania sued the Democratic Party over the fact they made a bunch of election law changes back there before the 2020 election, which weren't legal, and challenged him. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court decided against that case, too. But Judge Thomas dissented, saying, basically, this does matter. If you can't have a way, if the citizen and government can't have a way to self-govern, which is basically what Thomas was saying was happening when the legislature was not involved in making these changes, and yet the government went ahead and did it. City officials or county officials went ahead and changed the rules, didn't involve the legislature. If you can't don't have a way of self-governing like this, you don't have a constitutional republic. And we've used part of that in our argument to the Ninth Circuit. And then, of course, there's the State Board of Education, Brown versus the State Board of Education, which goes all the way back to 1954 and talks about the fact that black citizens back then were disenfranchised and lost confidence in the ability to have a fair outcome in education because of segregation, and took that position and said, we don't have any confidence that our race is going to be, of blacks is going to be educated properly like whites because you've separated them and you've created different conditions for them. Therefore, we have no confidence in our education system. And the Supreme Court heard that case and decided with the African-American community, which they should do in the election case.
Sure.
So we're making these arguments to the Ninth Circuit, and we hope that they will remand the case back to the U.S. District Court and allow us to look, kick the tires and look under the hood and make our case to
sure.
the state that
sure.
you've got to do something to change these horrific laws that are now part of Oregon's voting system and are destroying election integrity and disenfranchising voters.
Well, it's really unfortunate.
Whether the politicians...
Yeah,
you know, whether they want to admit it or not, it's happening, and we've got plenty of evidence.
Absolutely, it is. And it's really unfortunate that you hear from the Democrats that challenging elections is an attack on democracy, except if you can't trust the election, you don't have democracy in the first place. So we're going to hope for the best as this case continues to unroll. And as I said, we're going to have you back in September to talk about it some more. I do want to talk with you, though, about Mike Lindell's summit. He had this summit recently here about election integrity. Can you give us a real quick rundown in terms of what happened there?
Yeah, basically, Mike's rollout of his plan to save the election integrity across the country is to put an end to what he called constant lying by public officials about whether or not the voter tabulator machines are online and can be manipulated by outside sources. We've got plenty of evidence that suggests that they have been. But the state keeps denying it, and they won't allow us to look under the hood and kick the tires, so to speak, because the courts don't allow and haven't been allowing any of the evidence on the record under this no-standing situation. So Mike basically unrolled this plan where he's got a device that he spent a heck of a lot of time with IT experts to develop, and also a lot of his own money, God bless him. And this device is able to pick up and identify any IP addresses and any MAC addresses of any of these machines and voter election centers that may be online during during the election cycle when ballots are coming in and being tabulated. And the idea is we're going to catch these people in the act because we know they're doing this and they keep saying that they're not, that the machines are air-gapped and they're not online when there's evidence that they are. And the idea is to centralize this across all the country, have as much data gathered by as many of these devices as you can, and be able to put together a cognizant picture of how the elections are getting manipulated once again by machine and online sorts of things.
We only got about a minute here with you. Do you if you can gather that information and show it and prove it that all of this technology that they said wasn't happening really is happening, we had that kind of evidence with these 2,000 mules. So do you think that kind of evidence will be enough to sway any judges to actually take action?
I don't know what legal angle they're going to use if they gather the information, other than to say the counties and state officials are lying and the machines are online. And so basically you take another case similar to ours out of that and say we have lost voter integrity, we're being disenfranchised, we have no confidence in our election system, and it has to be stopped and it has to be redone. I can see them making an argument like that, but I don't know where it's going to go. And other concerns were that, well, maybe they'll put no parking signs up, 10-minute parking in front of election centers to where somebody can't sit in their car and gather this information, because it's supposed to be able to pick this up to 100 yards from any computer site that's online. But who knows what they're going to do.
It just seems like if you want people to trust the elections, they should open the books, and every election ought to be audited. That's the only way forward here. All right, unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Chuck, I want to thank you so much for your time today and look forward to talking to you next month about election integrity.
We certainly will, Mark. Take care.
And thank you for joining us today. We certainly hope you're at least a little wiser for having been here. You know, discussions with Chuck are always full with a lot of truly expert insights and worth a second listen to catch what you might have missed the first time. After our show airs on our network of stations, for which we are truly grateful to be on, see iSpyRadio.com, and you can listen to the podcast version there, or find us on your favorite podcasting platform, iSpy Radio. Today's show is 13-34. Thank you if you give us a like or subscribe. That helps spread the word so others can be as wise as you are, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.